Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Take advantage of their Terra Luna Intel report on Telegram, which brings you the hottest news and updates on all things Terra each and every day. Find it using the link in the show notes. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, we have a CeFi Space, Washington Nationals, and other Luna news. Let's take a listen.
Good evening, boys and girls. It's been a busy day of AMAs. I was kind of listening to a variety of spaces today while kind of roaming around work and doing other things. trying to see if we can catch up on everything today. I'm not even sure what is going on anymore, just because there's so many things happening simultaneously. If anyone has any news or alpha to spill, certainly hop on and do so while we wait for some folks to come on. Shirk, what's up?
Hey, Seffy, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I figured I'd just hop up to kind of get the ball rolling here while we're getting people in. Can kind of discuss the news good. A bit.
Yeah, obviously the big Washington National news is the headliner. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it was a shocker for sure, I would say. I did not expect it to be baseball. I grew up playing baseball for about 15, 16 years, and I'm really excited to see it. To see them dive into the baseball world and get the ball rolling for everybody in that world. I think the Super Bowl coming up this weekend for football, I think it's going to be huge publicity for crypto, and a lot of pro sports teams are going to be kind of following suit with this kind of thing.
You know, I imagine some of the NFT marketplace folks have been thinking about doing some kind of Washington Nationals related, like collectors pieces or something like that, huh? There are a lot of good sort of like sports paraphernalia related sort of tie-ins to that might be pretty cool that goes with that. But I was talking, of course, with the Luna Bulls folks, this morning, and kind of the evolution of their marketplace. But these kind of things can be really cool as far as like little, I don't know, NFT artifacts or something like that. So we'll see what comes of it. The Washington Nationals tie-up, basically, as far as we can tell, involves sort of a mixture of ultimately doing like sales within the stadium, potentially in UST, as well as so that would imply some sort of electronic integrations to make that happen, I suppose. That could be pretty exciting, because really, once you develop that sort of thing once, it's pretty easy to deploy to lots and lots of other sports related apps and other stadiums and what have you. So that would be pretty cool. The As far as exposure to the DC area, from the perspective that, you know, those box like seats that will have our sort of regalia displayed, I guess is sort of, maybe it's a play on, you know, like the all of the business and political folks that sort of roam through there and get an opportunity to find out what Terra Money is doing and what it's all about from the perspective of payments and such. That could be pretty interesting. I've always felt after like dissecting this argument a long time that UST being pegged to the dollar, obviously, is technically bullish for the dollar in the sense that, you know, if countries were to develop their own currencies or peg to some other like form of, well, pegged some other stable source other than the dollar, then that could be relatively negative. We were in the, for example, we were in the AMA today with Shade Protocol, and their which is a protocol on the Secret Network, and they have a stable coin. They're debuting called Silk, and essentially, the concept there is that it's actually not pegged to the dollar, but a dollar plus some basket of commodities. I'm not sure I fully understood what they're going after there, but it's not a pure dollar peg. So I think a pure dollar peg technically is something that the political class, at least in the United States, should consider embracing and not pushing away, because that actually basically continues to maintain essentially what would be a dollar hegemony. So I think that would be a think of this sort of stuff. Excuse me, my phone was kind of ringing there. It looks pretty interesting, and I don't know how much traction it creates as far as like new users on Terra, but it certainly can't hurt. And it should generate a fair number of sort of media references and such, which is kind of cool. Any comments, guys? Or Crow, huh? Crown, I'm sorry. Crown, you there?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, how y'all doing?
Good, good. Thoughts, comments?
Well, I pressed the button by mistake, but
that's cool.
I think it's very, very bullish, especially with all the turmoil that Dogecoin has been going through with the SEC, and people have to understand that I would say that people are trying to position themselves. I mean, especially like the crypto heads, those that are influential and got money. So, me personally, I think this, you know what I'm saying, this is overall bullish, UST, Terra, and I want to even see them go out to California, Los Angeles Angels with Otani. I was looking at that. When I was looking at this move, I was looking at, okay, I can see him going out to Otani and making him, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but making him like kind of like a spokesperson.
Now, are you into baseball?
Yes, I am. I'm an Atlanta Braves fan. Die Braves. Gotcha. Born and bred.
That's
so
cool.
Otani, I mean, that's a man. People, especially me, I know, say you never seen that type of player before. A pitcher, then a hitter, then I think he's a switch hitter too. Got power pitching, power hitting. So I mean,
so
I can see.
So you're feeling that like crypto should move more into like sports marketing?
I think so. Because I guess it's like a whole totality with, like, you know what I'm saying, with the metaverse, with the NBA, even the NBA talking about really VR and having that experience as far as courtside before really COVID hit. So I mean, they lining everything up. They know what they want to do. I would say that. When? Who knows? But they have lined everything up.
Yeah, and so, to be kind of a little clear on the maybe turn your mic down a bit because it's reverbing a lot.
Oh,
Or you turn your speakers down. Yeah, it's okay. No, what I was going to say is it was interesting that so what happened with the SEC thing was actually very specific to mirror finance, which is like, you know, a synthetic stock trading platform. It's, you know, basically decentralized. So that whole sort of fiasco is essentially, you know, there's not really, and not only that, but that whole situation where they tried to subpoena Do Kwon, that was kind of silly just because they just don't have any jurisdiction one way or the other. Not to mention, he doesn't own any portion of Mirror Finance or otherwise. So there's no actual case there one way or the other. But as far as SEC and like UST, it's not even really related. UST is not actually claiming to be an actual dollar. So technically, it's not a U.S. Treasury violation or some kind of counterfeiting sort of thing. It's just claiming to be stabilized by the community, essentially, of, you know, a mixture of programs and, you know, arbitrage by the you know, external organization. So it's not really a whole lot of sort of SEC concern there. You know, what UST is eventually going to be classified as, who knows? You know, is it a commodity? What is it? Who knows? But it's certainly UST particularly is not really a security, whether or not one argues that Luna technically is, I suppose. You know, but anyway, that's what that's all about. And I think with so many of like altcoins being sort of quasi securities or outright securities, there is an uphill battle there. And I think at this point, it just represents sort of a sea change in how projects and companies are funded to some extent too. So I'm not so sure it's all bad, but it doesn't, you know, a lot of these altcoin related systems don't necessarily conform with the traditional securities laws and all of that. But, you know, I don't know how much influence like peddling can go on just by this being in DC. Who knows? It can't be bad, I think. I think it's good exposure. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, good to have you on. Graham, what's going on with you?
Hey, I guess my question for you would be, it was almost like a pseudonymous DAO, because the way the media and the Nationals proposed it was like Terra's this big DAO and everything. But are they going to vote on every little like contract thing, like a front, right? Using the word DAO there.
So you're asking, is there going to be a vote for sort of every like small, I guess, transaction that happens between Terra and this project? You mean?
Yeah, basically. Like, I already know the answer is going to be no. Like, when the negotiations are happening, but it was put to a community vote. But like, I know when I saw.
You're breaking up pretty good, but I think what you're trying to say is that, like, you know, the vote was for one thing, but it wasn't necessarily clear which team. Yeah, your voice is breaking up a lot, bud. So nobody can hear you. But yeah, I think his question is that really the vote was for one thing, and then I think it was thought that maybe there'd be another vote when, you know, it's finally decided that which team it's going to be and finalizing that, but. You know, then subsequently everything just sort of like emerged. So yeah, the concept of voting on chain is a little bit weird, and that it's really hard to tell what the best way to do that is. If you spill too much information, you may be violating sort of like an agreement with a company. On the other hand, if you don't, you sort of, you know, you can't basically have a public vote. So it's a tricky thing. I think it's I think your point's taken, though, that like the voting mechanism for how you do these things is a bit dicey and might in the future have like untoward consequences. So yeah, good. I think that's sort of what he's trying to say, but his voice is breaking up quite a bit. Graham, you there again? You want to try again?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. you answered everything. You're basically
kind of. Did that cut? Yeah. So yeah, you're. I think maybe you're driving. And it's kind of like you're coming and going. But yeah, I think I got the gist of what you're asking. Well, cool. Let me get Let's Learn on here for a second.
Hey, Sevi. Hey, so I was in the I was in the AMA this morning with the Luna Bulls, and like shortly after that, when you were, they were talking about how like how Bored Apes became like a phenomenon and things like that, and like how the celebrity adoption was, and so I actually dropped a suggestion in like the Luna Bulls Discord shortly after, because I think now that there's a sports team and there's this lounge, like you can have this NFT project, whether it be the Bulls or the Punks, you know, some blue chip on Terra, you know, either airdrop or coordinate with some of the more popular players and get some of those NFTs in the hands of them. And then, you know, kind of market those projects by maybe having like the kind of art in the club or, you know, 3D models printed of them and displayed around. And so I think that could maybe help catapult like the Luna NFT space kind of via some of these more popular celebrities that are now kind of linked to Terra via, you know, their team having a sponsor.
Yeah, sure. No, it sounds, that's what I was saying just a little while ago, that there's clearly some NFT opportunities either for tickets or like, you know, special products or whatever. Someone posted today, I forget the name of the store. I retweeted it like not, you know, 30 minutes ago, but someone would produce a hat essentially that they had a limited run for sale with sort of the Terra symbol in the middle and then Washington Nationals around it in a circle. It looked pretty good, actually. Kind of like a dad hat style look. But anyway, yeah, those kinds of things could be tied to like actual physical collector's items as well. In theory, that could be pretty interesting. So, although I think, I don't know that any of the NFT projects today on Terra have like combined with like, you know, physical types of goods or artwork, but that could be pretty cool. Because I think some of the like the Terra Loot and Luna Loot, and or I think there's some other stores out there, Kado, that could do some interesting custom products and whatnot and put them for sale. But let's see. Mandivs is here too. Yeah. Any other sort of points or comments on that?
No, that's it.
Cool. Yeah. If anyone wants to share anything else or knows anything else about the Nationals, there is quite a bit of like economic activity with baseball because they do have a lot of games every year, so you wind up with a bit more exposure than you do in terms of the frequency of games compared to like the NFL or NBA. So not as much national reach, I mean international reach though with baseball, so that's kind of a little bit of a downside. But as far as like the position at DC, it's probably going to get a lot of visibility via politicians, business people that go through there. And ultimately, you want to catch the eye of someone who wants to incorporate that, you know, into business or, you know, into a government, sort of like the Busan idea in South Korea. So those things would be really cool. We'll see what happens. A little bit of news from so there's several sort of AMAs that were going on today. Lot of sort of bullish news via the folks at Cosmos, where the big conversation right now is really around the concept of shared security. The reason why Cosmos news in general is always a great thing for Terra is because anything that improves the growth of the Cosmos increases like liquidity and sort of money and UST usage that flows into and out of Terra. And especially with UST being the primary stablecoin of the Cosmos at this point, some of the neat things, the most important element happening right now for Cosmos Hub, which is, you know, with the Atom token and such, is that shared security is being developed, which is to say right now, if you have served, for example, the Cosmos hub, which is the primary chain of Cosmos, sort of like the you know, granddaddy chain, so to speak. There's no smart contracts on there as of this moment. So smart contract platforms with Cosmos chains include Terra Luna. They include things like Juno, Secret Network, and there's some others. But basically, what security looks like on any of our chains now is, of course, if you've staked Luna, you know how that works. You stake with a validator. There's validators, a certain number of validators per chain that basically gets you Luna yield, right? Or the yield from your Luna comes from the transactional value of that network, right? So the amount of staking that happens secures the network, and it does so by the slashing risk principle, where validators are essentially punished for providing bad data to the network. So the shared security model basically works out such that a validator who is on the Cosmos hub could also be a validator for another consumer chain, essentially. So for example, if the Visa or MasterCard network decide, hey, you know, we want to build a blockchain, they don't necessarily have to find you know, a new set of validators. They don't necessarily have to go into the validator business, at least not up front. They could just simply pair up with validators who are already providing services to Cosmos. And in a shared security model, like let's say the Visa network, they could basically have a Visa token or like transactional value on that network and just simply pay those validators. And those validators will then pay you, the Atom holder, in yield, which is a very interesting thing. So basically the way Cosmos works is if we have like 100 other chains, then and those chains have some shared validators, then when you stake with those validators, you may be actually getting yield from multiple chains simultaneously. So like while Atom's yield right now might be 14%, you might have yield from like a dozen other chains plus airdrops and all sorts of stuff coming in. So the you know, value accrual mechanism for Atom might wind up being like second only to Luna, if not maybe superior, except for the fact that its tokens are inflationary. So really, really sort of bullish for Atom, because the more people that use the Cosmos network, the more people that are basically de facto using UST, all of which sort of comes back to, you know, value for Terra. So that's kind of interesting. And the way that the folks from Cosmos were talking, and they've had some very eloquent speakers, by the way, like really sharp folks. And their description is that like, this is not that far away, and super, super interesting. So that's the shared security model for Atom and the Cosmos. I don't know if validators on Terra are going to somehow like be cross-pollinated with those folks. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But that might have implications for who, if there is such a thing, there may be some implications for potentially like, you know, cross yield from those different systems. I'm not sure about that though. That's just me kind of talking out loud. We'll see what happens. So that's that news. Other than that, of course, the Prism folks just did their AMA. Very exciting stuff. The weird thing that happened to the Prism token today. So I think the floor price of Prism during the Mango market was like around 33 cents or something. And I have no idea why the price of Prism token fell today. I don't know if someone had a chunk that they sold in an illiquid market on purpose to drop the price to then go buy a bunch of Prism. I don't know what happened, but it's slightly below that now. It's like a 29 cents, but I basically just got a, like, I 10x the amount that, or actually, no, I'm sorry, I 20x the amount I actually got the first time. And essentially, the reason I did that is because, well, that's just what I do, number one, but that's neither here nor there. The interesting thing about Prism is the Prism X token, which is the governance token of Prism protocol. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But or I should say the token value accrual mechanism looks super interesting in terms of the number of pairs that Prism is going to be paired with. It's going to be C Luna, Y Luna, P Luna, and Prism UST, Prism X Prism. These are like, I think, the pairs that are going to be available. And every time people transact on those pairs, some of that transactional value, from what I understand, comes back to the Prism token. And then additionally, Luna gets accumulated in the treasury of Prism, some of that yield is going to be, you know, going back to Prism holders. And as you know, the yield on Luna sort of rises because some of the yield is paid in Luna. So if like Luna is like 5x today's price, then the yield on your Prism token may be quite high comparatively to the future price of Prism, compared to the current price of Prism. So current price of Prism is what it is, but let's say the Prism price didn't even change, you could have a yield that's basically really obnoxious in the future as a result of the treasury building that happens there. So I think that's a really interesting thing. I think this concept that, by the way, like, oh, all the Terra alts go down, this is just silly thinking. Like, there is a difference between the various projects, and, you know, people should like allocate their funds accordingly. This is not really financial advice, but I think the conversations tend to be very like, well, I got burned on a few tokens, or I bought them too high, and so therefore, like, the projects are not good. This is not necessarily the case. The market does whatever the market does. And sometimes that's a result of tokenomics problems. Sometimes it's not. So a lot of times what happens is people don't sort of like research the token distribution model and how tokens are released, and then like buy too high and then like blame the protocol, whereas that's not the way to go. So if you're ever not sure about an altcoin or what you're buying, I would say, honestly, you shouldn't buy anything if you don't know what you're actually getting. That's a different issue. But me personally, I think the Prism system looks super, super interesting. I think it's one of the most interesting DeFi protocols in the world, actually, is my sort of feeling about it. And which is why we've like talked about it for months. And I think there's a lot of interesting arbitrage opportunities and stuff that we've talked about before. A lot of exciting stuff happening there. A lot of interesting like trading opportunities and such that will emerge. So keep an eye out for that, sort of learn along the way. And I think you should get into those things fairly slowly. And don't go crazy refracting either, by the way. When Prism opens up, don't go like, oh yeah, I'm going to convert all my Luna to this or all my Luna to that. I think there's going to be a lot of like market volatility in the beginning, and should be really careful about the fact that P Luna and Y Luna, when you refract them, can go down in price, right? So be careful with, you know, how you play with your money, I would say. So some people are fairly professional about it. They know what they're doing. Other people are just going to monkey around and, like, you know, be upset that the value of their portfolio is down for no apparent reason. So you have a plan for whatever it is you're going to do there, and just do it cautiously. Let me get Rip up here. Rip, you there?
Hey, Sefi. Yeah.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to confirm. You said that the X Prism token holders, Luna will be given to them or to be yielded to them if you're staking?
No. Okay. Luna is in the treasury, and it will be accumulated by part of the revenue from the system. So ultimately, the yield that comes from that Luna will ultimately be sort of like distributed in some form or fashion to the Prism holders. So long term, as the treasury gets bigger and bigger, in theory, it's sort of like, you know, some of the DAOs and whatnot, the protocol is going to own a fair amount of like treasury value that the concept is to make sure that the Prism holder is going to have that some of that yield is going to come back to you as staking yield in the form of, you know, your Prism tokens. Because there's like and Ryan's here too. He might be able to describe it a little bit more clearly, but basically there are, you know, buybacks and such involved with the PRISM system and like various value accrual mechanisms over time that get generated from both the protocol revenue and the, you know, the treasury revenue that ultimately emerges. And Ryan's coming on here, so let me see if he can provide a little bit more insight because he's involved with PRISM more directly.
Okay, great.
Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, Zephy, what's up?
Hey, bud. Can you enlighten folks a little bit about the PRISM token itself briefly?
Yeah, so there's kind of four main value accrual mechanisms that accrue back to XPRISM. So the first one is for YLUNA that's staked in PRISM, 10% of the yield, 10% of the LUNA yield from that from each YLUNA that's staked will accrue to the protocol, and essentially the protocol will swap that for PRISM and then distribute that into the XPRISM pool. So for anyone that's paying attention on the governance staking page, you'll see that the PRISM to XPRISM conversion rate is kind of slowly creeping up. And that's based purely on the swap fees that are happening on the AMM, on the PRISM UST and the PRISM XPRISM pairs. So essentially, as more protocol buybacks happen, the amount of PRISM in the XPRISM pool increases, which then increases the amount of PRISM that one XPRISM is worth. So that's one of the mechanisms. The other mechanism that's going to probably generate quite a lot of yield for XPRISM stakers is that any unstaked YLUNA or Y assets, as we grow out the asset classes, that are they're in the protocol. So a good example would be the YLUNA that's in the YLUNA PRISM LP, and also the CLUNA that's in the CLUNA PRISM LP. 100% of the yield from those assets, so it doesn't go back to the people holding those assets, it'll go back to the XPRISM stakers. So again, it'll be swaps for PRISM, so buybacks, but buy pressure on the PRISM token, then that PRISM will be distributed into the XPRISM pool in the same manner. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I hope that everyone understands that. So when basically the PRISM protocols is splitting up your LUNA into CLUNA, which is basically the like a surrogate marker, so to speak, for LUNA, and then the PLUNA portion, which you can that doesn't have any yield, and then the YLUNA portion that contains all of the yield. And then you would have to stake the YLUNA piece of the puzzle, and then PLUNA you could sort of trade at will. But what he's saying is the folks that have YLUNA or more YLUNA and they stake it, that is earning those people yield from YLUNA and a bit of fee as well from that piece that goes back essentially to PRISM holders. And then secondly, all of those surrogate markers, like CLUNA, for example, that doesn't generate any yield, it's just a trading instrument. In the background, that's basically staked LUNA, and all of that yield is going to like the protocol as well, and therefore value accrual to the PRISM holders. So yeah, all of that's pretty fascinating, like how that lays out, but it just, you're basically in the PRISM system. So in order to participate in this, a lot of the yield that's being given up as part of that process is heading back to the protocol. One question I had for you, Ryan, is the LP. So, or the LPs that are going to be out there. You're going to have these various like LPs that tie into PRISM, like the CLUNA, like PRISM pair, and then the PRISM to YLUNA, PRISM to PLUNA. The rewards for the LP, those are getting paid out. How and where is the revenue from that coming from? Is that purely transactional, or is there like an incentive, or what's that all about?
So the current LPs that we've put out there, just as we've launched the protocol, we've not incentivized those LPs as of yet. So it's just a typical value accrual through trading fees. Like if you think about, if you provide to TerraSwap, right, and you don't stake those LP tokens within a within the protocols themselves, or if you think about the White Whale LP that's not giving any emissions, you're only getting the swap fees that are accruing back to the LP pool. So that typically works. So if you take the example of TerraSwap. They pay, so there's a 0.3% trade fee, and that trade fee essentially goes into the pool in a similar way to Prism X Prism, in a way that means that the pool grows, so your LP tokens, as you redeem them, are worth more of the underlying assets within the LP.
So it's basically an auto compounder, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how it's working today, but instead of all of the fees going to the LP in Prism Swap, we have there's a 0.3% fee, 0.2% of that is going back to the LPs, and 0.1% of that is going to X Prism stakers. When we expand to, so we'll have seven LPs. I think you missed Luna Prism and AUST Prism when you were giving your list of the LPs. Those are the recent right. LPs total. So we do plan on incentivizing some of those LPs. So particularly the YP and C Lunar LPs, because obviously there's a relative risk associated with providing to those LPs. But we do still intend on keeping the incentives relatively modest. We don't want to, you know, ultimately kill the token with ultra high emissions like we've seen with a lot of other Terra alts. So they'll be relatively modest, and, you know, the protocol itself has, you know, through the Forge event has accrued a decent amount of UST to be able to provide decent liquidity on those pairs.
So what he's describing is super important, because there are various systems out there that give you a very high APY, but they're given out in a huge amount of the protocol token, which then gets either sold or sort of auto compounded, which ends up being like split into, like half gets split, half gets goes back into the underlying token. So there's different scenarios that emerge, but you don't want too much. You don't want too much of the protocol emissions long run, and that because that's sort of negative to the token holder. Right now, the Prism UST pool has, at the moment, with all the, you know, brisk activity, it's like 37% APR, and the Prism X Prism pool is about 11.56% APR, and so that's certainly something that people can participate in. Both of those have about like 7.5 million UST worth of liquidity sort of trapped in those at the moment. So not very high just yet. So there's quite a bit of room to go there in terms of us being pretty early when it comes to Prism, obviously. My thought is that, like, if Prism over the period of years, you know, becomes one of a major DeFi protocol with refracting of lots and lots of different assets, like, you know, Atom and Solana and this and that, I mean, you really have a lot of potential future value accrual mechanisms for the Prism token. So I'm really interested in watching that play out over the years. Should be a lot of fun. So I kind of took my, you know, X Prism tokens, and I just kind of like stuck them away there in governance and never to be seen again. I'm just going to leave them there forever, sort of see what happens. So maybe I'm doing the right thing, maybe the wrong thing. We'll see how it goes.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the use case for the C Luna? What can we do with it?
I don't think you really do anything with it. It's more of a trading instrument between, it's just a surrogate marker for Luna, where in the background, Luna can actually be staked, right? Because if you're not staking Luna, in the background, nobody's getting that benefit, right? Like, the protocol's not, and you're not, as a trading feature. So it doesn't make that much sense to just have Luna sitting there. So I think that's what that's for. Ryan, maybe you can like clarify a little further.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So like when you refract Luna, you essentially kind of skip the C Luna phase and you go straight to P Luna and Y Luna. However, if you want to obviously take your P Luna and Y Luna and then turn it back into Luna, it's essentially the instrument that allows you to do that. So we've got a function, it's called merge. You provide an equal amount of P Luna and Y Luna. So let's just say one P Luna and one Y Luna. You'll get one C Luna. And then your C Luna then is kind of like B Luna in a way, in that you can either slow burn it over the 21 days back to just one for one for Luna, or you can swap it on RAMM, back to liquid Luna. But, you know, likelihood is that you'll be taking, 1 or 2% hit on that, like you do when you're instant swapping B Luna back to Luna. So I guess it's kind of like an instrument for getting back into liquid Luna.
You will have, in other words, another sort of arbitrage opportunity too. So similar to how B Luna and, you know, another like sort of Luna, not copies, but, you know, like other Luna style primitives that should peg to Luna, they don't usually keep their peg perfectly. So you may have some like free arbitrage opportunities to sort of correct the peg. And you sort of provide a service sort of for doing that. but Riff, go ahead again. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Is it still accruing staking rewards to see Luna?
Like it is accruing staking rewards, but not to the holder. So you can't stake see Luna and get rewards. So if you're just holding it, you'll get no rewards for holding C Luna. The rewards, but it is still staked Luna, and all those staked rewards will go back to Prism buybacks, and those Prism buybacks then distributed to ex Prism stakers.
I see. Okay, what can you talk a little bit about the treasury? Is that something where it's going to accumulate Luna?
Yeah, so I think Sefi maybe just made a little misunderstanding on treasury. So essentially, like the protocol accrues fees through all those different mechanisms, and then at least once per day, probably more regularly, the fee collector will then just convert all those rewards into Prism and drop them into the X Prism pool.
So the mistake I made then is it's not that the treasury is accumulating Luna. Luna's sort of in the protocol because of the sort of C Luna component, right? Like it's sort of there anyway. Like it's staked in the background, but it's accruing value also, right, from the yield.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple, any C Luna that's knocking around in the protocol is still accruing staking yield. That staking yield goes into essentially like a fee collector, and then that fee collector converts that staking yield to Prism and distributes it to the X Prism pool.
So really, the bigger the total value locked gets, the more that component's going up, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, like I see Jimmy's in the chat here as well. If you go to Jimmy's profile, you can sort of like you can play around with a value calculator that, you know, you can make an estimation about the percentage of Luna that's in the protocol, but then not locked into staking, and it'll give you an idea of what that revenue will be and how that would potentially affect the XPRISM APR.
Cool. Since Jimmy's here, let's maybe see if he has any comments about what we've said so far.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, just to build up off of what Ryan was talking about in regards of C Luna not accruing value to the holder, but more towards, you know, the X Prism staker, since 100% of those staking rewards are, you know, being distributed to X Prism stakers. So, well, one of the things that I've been trying to think about and collaborate and essentially scheme on is, you know, how can I get more Y Luna and C Luna like off of our protocol, right? Like how can I get it onto other protocols and be used as collateral or like essentially give them utility somewhere else, maybe even like cross-chain, right? Because if that C-Luna is on, I don't know, Solana, if it's on Polygon, if it's on, you know, the secret network or whatever, it doesn't, you know, accrue values on those chains. It accrues values back in on Terra and back to the X-Prism stakers. And it's 100%, meaning that like for every one C-Luna we have, we need to have 10 Y-Lunas being staked in one of the protocols to essentially generate the same amount of fees, right? So like our incentives...
But what would be the incentive for a person off-chain to want to hold C-Luna? What do you think is the
I can give possible? A good example. I can give a good example on-chain, a really basic example, and then Jimmy can do some more imagining. So because we've got all our liquidity pools against Prism, right? I think what's going to be really attractive to some people is to have a C-Luna Luna pool, right? So I don't think it'll be long before either like TerraSwap or Astroport or Loop decide to spin up a Luna C-Luna pool, because, you know, we all love being in the Luna B-Luna pool because it's kind of like you've got the same asset on both sides of the LP. So if you're bullish Luna, you're just accumulating more Luna through the swap fees on that pair. So if, you know, if there was a C-Luna Luna pool that span up on another DEX, and then that's started to accrue like some TVL similar to the way that B-Luna Luna pairs are pretty popular and have grown, you know, really, really high liquidity on those pairs. In that example, you know, all the fees from the staked Luna would be coming back to X-Prism stakers.
Yeah, understood. Because it's staked here on Terra in the protocol, but the C-Luna is like a derivative of that that's just emitted into cyberspace somewhere. And like the idea is to try to get people to use that somehow. So would that imply then, would there be a Prism protocol deployment like on another chain too, maybe? Or would that not be the case?
I don't think that'll be the case. I think, like, you know, we want our derivatives to go perhaps cross chain, but, you know, building infrastructure and coding smart contracts and all that kind of stuff is probably not in scope for the time being. And then just to backtrack for one more example on C-Luna. So like on Astroport right now, there is a staked Luna pool, and there's some other wrapped wormhole assets from Lido on there emitting not only Astro, but also like the wormhole LDO tokens, right? And for Lido, like their whole goal is to get more to get stickier utility for their staked assets as well, right? So one of the things that we could potentially do is you know, partner up with them, and you know, they would be happy to provide LDO incentives for like a C-Luna staked Luna pair, or like a staked Luna, and then you can just like decompose that right into the Y-Luna, the yield bearing LP token for that pair, and provide LDO incentives for that. And you get to a point where, okay, now you have really sticky use cases for people to hold staked Luna, getting incentives, and then people using C-Luna in this pair that's essentially, you know, pretty risk-free to just stack more Luna. And, you know, you're used to that already with like B-Luna Luna. So, I think that these types of ideas and opportunities will essentially just create more and more value coming back to Prism stakers.
I suppose even the P-Luna portion could, like, there'd be rationality for it to go off-chain because it doesn't have any yield-bearing component anyway, right? So you might as well, like, you could have that out there as well, theoretically. Although that might be less well understood by someone on another chain. But anyway, yeah, I was sort of imagining different ideas for, you know, even the various Luna surrogates, or however you want to call them, like, you know, like C-Luna or and Luna and these sort of derivatives, so to speak. You know, if they're supposed to stay pegged to Luna or pegged to each other in theory, then like these would make some really nice, simple like rebalancer bots too, because then all you got to do is like just have a pool of, you know, like, you know, you could do a pool of, say, Luna, C Luna, N Luna, et cetera, and B Luna. And since they all should sort of peg, you know, it doesn't matter that they don't actually, a rebalancer mostly plays on the volatility of all of them. And then it essentially functions as an auto compounder. So whichever one's cheaper, the rebalancer automatically will like sell more of the more expensive one for the cheaper one and kind of like go in circles. So that could be pretty interesting, but we'll see how that plays out. Let me get Zealot on here, who's kind of wanting to ask some questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to continue on the news front that you were going on.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so there is the announcement by White Whale that they're going to have a V UST token. So there's also the Whale token and the VUST, and I'm a little bit confused on how the two are going to work out. And like right now, I'm just holding some Whale after their boot swap, right? I'd be interested in knowing about that. And also any comments about like how there hasn't been any significant price movement after the Washington Nationals announcement yet. I'd love to hear your thoughts and around that. Like I thought it would be a bit of a pump or something like that. Not that I care about that in terms of like selling or anything, but it's just more trying to understand like what is the sentiment in the market. Like, does nobody care about it? Or
I think those things, first off, they take a while to sort of make the rounds in terms of their effect on price and whatnot. And, you know, these things can play out over like a week, but it's so hard to tell, man, like as far as like, you know, what news is doing and what other coins are doing in reference to Luna and whatnot. Like it's really tough to say. I've sort of given up the idea of like figuring out exactly whether something's going to up or down based on some sort of news. I think that's a very sort of like risky trading sort of concept is to just sort of like, you know, FOMO in on the news and whatnot. So I just don't typically try to correlate it too much. As far as, yeah, that the Whale story, I think the concept is that VUST is not that dissimilar to Anchor UST, except any additional yield that might accrue for that. So all that would happen is when you deposit on White Whale, same way that you deposit on Anchor Earn, and you, like, let's say you stick, you know, 10,000 in there, then whatever the value of AUST at that time, you're going to get 10,000 worth of AUST, right? And AUST, you usually get less of it because the AUST accrues value, and the VUST, or whatever they're calling it, is going to do something very similar. Presumably, it'll be Anchor yield plus whatever they get via their arbitrage bots and such. We're still waiting for all of that to play out. And also, I think it'll be a while until there's a clear value accrual mechanism for them for the Whale token itself. I think comparatively, Prism's like value accrual mechanism is more obvious and more immediate to me, because as soon as refracting and such begins, you know, transactions start to take place, and there is a sort of clean, you know, mechanism for value to build there. But White Whale's a ways away. I do love the idea of that project as well. I thought it was one of the kind of cooler ideas out there, and really we just have to wait to see how all that executes. So I do have some Whale token, and I got it on Pylon Gateway, which may or may not be the best way to do it, but it's sort of like the risk-free sort of investing concept. And, you know, so that's where I've acquired that. So I haven't done anything special with my Whale token. It just sits there in the Pylon Gateway, and eventually I'll have access to that. So, but even that is another one of those coins I felt like to me, it's such an interesting project. If it executes really well over the years, it does its duty maintaining the peg, and they're able to come up with new sort of like arbitrage ideas, then, you know, it might be an interesting sort of long hold for me to see what happens. But like, these are projects that are going to take quite a while to emerge, right? Like if you look at like what Luna did, you know, when it first came out, it opens up and then it dumps for like a year, right? So it's not like it's, you know, every coin sort of goes through an automatic like negative price discovery, as I call it. I don't know what the right term for that is, but you know, it's going to go downward and sort of find a bottom at some point. Like it's funny because like the Prism launch is just really funny because like presumably people bought the coin at a certain price. And then I guess as the price slipped a little bit and a few people sold, like more people sold, I don't really know like what that's all about. But what that implies to me is that like there are some people that bought like too much Prism token for their taste or whatever. They had the opportunity to actually exit and leave Prism and like, you know, without even having to like there was a period where you could actually just exit that for free. And then afterwards, like, I guess what happens is a few people sell or do something. And the next thing you know, there's like a chain reaction. So, you know, it's like interesting how people behave, but don't underestimate people's willingness to sell low.
the
weirdest thing.
Gonna comment on the idea of like, it's a kind of a double-edged sword when a new protocol launches, like, you know, I'm thinking of Nexus, or, you know, a bunch of other like very promising, amazing team, but then they fall into the trap of like, you know, the community is like, when, right? And they're like, okay, let's release something with like minimal functionality and, you know, have that play out in the, but then what happens is people buy the token and they're like, oh, it's not mooning. That's because, you know, you're only at version 0.8, right? And it has like five versions of different, you know, auto compounding and yielding and all of that that's not even introduced yet, right? So that's kind of a, you know, the community is like always pushing them to release as early as possible, but then, you know, you don't get the fully realized version of the protocol yet, right? So it's that piece that is pretty hilarious to see. The other comment I had was around the boot swap or like the liquidity bootstrapping events and the price discovery or negative price discovery that you're talking about. You know, there is so many things that are going on the ecosystem. Like I can talk about the whale token, for example, when during the boot swap, I ended up with like almost 5,000 of it, right? And then, you know, the next couple of weeks, I didn't have enough liquid Luna or like, you know, I was gonna, there was these other opportunities that came up. Like, do I really need 5,000 whale token? I'm gonna, you know, shave off a few and buy this other NFT and then, you know, buy it back or something. So there's there's so many factors, right? Like it's not.
Yeah. And like, yeah. just to kind of clarify my line of thinking on that, I'll just give you an example of what I did for that whale token launch. Maybe people can learn some lessons from that. So I knew I could get like risk-free token at the Pylon Gateway. It's not the best possible way to deploy UST sometimes. Like sometimes it's better to just buy Luna, right? So I would have preferred if I had Luna and the yield from that went to my Pylon Gateway so that I could ultimately like have the price exposure of Luna and get my whale tokens, but whatever. Anyway, I got some whale tokens via Pylon Gateway, which is the risk-free way to do it. You just deposit some UST and it accumulates, right? But when the bootstrapping thing was going on, I was interested in it because like this kind of process fits exactly how I buy everything. Just basically like budgeting really small at the top and then just, you know, doubling my buy every, you know, 7 to 10% the price falls. So I did that all the way to the bottom of the whale tokens price. And then what I did is, and I only did this as an extra thing just to sort of like play the volatility. So I bought all the way to the bottom. And then I think I was up like from the bottom, like maybe something like 80%. And then I sold all of that whale token. And I already have exposure to it over in like the Pylon Gateway, but essentially now all my whale tokens are basically free sort of. So that's kind of how I look at it. If I already decided how much I want to allocate to a project, but that doesn't mean I couldn't necessarily buy a bottom if I see one, right? Like, because it doesn't make sense not to take advantage of like some of those extreme bottoms and then just sort of ride it up or something, you know, and whatnot. So that's kind of what I did there. It was a bit of a gamble, but I was comfortable holding it too if it went to like any lower, or I was comfortable holding it if it was going to drag for a long time. So you just have to think through, like, anything you're going to buy, you should really think through what your time horizon is, and do you have some sort of strategy like, you know, where you're not sitting there holding something that you don't have the tolerance to hold, right? Because not everything will be like a perfect buy that's going to go to infinity. So it just, some things are going to take time, like you said. So let me get You're My Boy on here, see if he has a question.
Yeah, thanks, Effie. I had a quick Prism sort of strategy question, but first wanted to see if you or Ryan maybe had any had a take on kind of the, at the macro level here. We've seen circulating Luna supply actually, you know, increase a bit over the last 7 to 10 days or so, and UST market cap's been relatively flat. I was expecting to see a bunch of Luna, you know, get unlocked so that folks could take advantage of Prism. So I'm not super surprised by that, but any broader take on why we've seen a bit of a stall here of late, and are you expecting to see the normal sort of Luna burn we've seen, you know, the last 6 to 12 months starts to heat back up once we start seeing deposits into Prism?
I've got a quick take on Luna burn. I think we're probably minting a little bit of Luna for the last, you know, week or so because of the fallout from the DGEN box. So the MIM DGEN box. I think there was a lot of Luna that was burnt to create additional UST for that solution. And I think, you know, as it's becoming a little bit less popular and people are starting to unwind out of that little bit, the UST is kind of being used to mint back Luna. That's my view. You know, when we see Luna being minted, it essentially means that there's less demand for UST, and that might not be that there's less demand, but that, you know, the lack of demand outweighs the demand, if that makes sense. So we've got one big solution that's sort of unwinding.
And the excess UST basically may move the peg.
Exactly.
Such that the UST is worth, let's say, 0.99. And therefore, there's like too much UST on the market, and the algorithm is going to mint Luna essentially in that process. Now, does that also, but at the same time, does that immediately result in like a major price change one way or the other for Luna? Not really. Like, you're not talking about so much that it is going to affect the global price that quickly. So there can be any number of reasons why, you know, Luna's price does whatever it does.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm personally really comfortable with the amount of Luna that's been minted currently. I don't know if you were around in May after the depegging that happened then, and the kind of concern around UST that happened. And, you know, I think there was a period where we were minting several million Luna a day. Here we're minting small amounts. I think we're about half a million Luna this month. And we know from historical events that we could pretty easily burn that entire amount that we've minted over the last couple of weeks in a single day. So I'm chilling right now, but I see that it's a concern if it obviously does continue to happen or starts to happen in larger amounts.
The circulating supply popped a little bit too today, as someone commented, and let me see how much Luna that was. Let's see here. Let's see. It's like we're at, well, actually it's not that much. We're at about 156 million circulating at the moment. So it's risen a bit over the past week or so, probably for similar reasons, although there's also in that context, there could be some people like unstaking, for example, to participate in Prism for Refraction or whatever. So you don't really know what that means automatically. So try not to like read too much into it. I think really the long, these are trend, the burn and mint trends are more relevant over like a 6 month to a year time frame than it is like any kind of spot change in prices.
Yeah, particularly with refraction getting ready to get started, I'm interested in seeing kind of maybe 30 days out from when that process starts, what the circulating Luna supply looks like. I would think there's going to be a sizable amount, you know, locked up here, likely in the first, you know, month or two. And sort of related to that, I just wanted to get your take on.
Oh, I forgot to mention, there's one other thing I noticed too, by the way. So remember when the anchor, so now that the anchor LTV is different. So one other catalyst for Luna becoming unstaked would be potentially people that don't need that much collateral in their in the anchor system, and they remove that collateral and potentially burn it, and that may have a role to play. Because I know I burned some of my B Luna, thinking that I could arb that later, you know, maybe you know in 21 days or whatever. You know, and then there's other people that like maxed out their LTV again and like bought more stuff or parked UST and anchor or whatever. So different people are doing different things. Also, if people's B Luna is actually just sitting in their wallet and they're earning UST, that's actually selling the Luna for UST essentially in the background. So that could play a role in some sort of like the yield of Luna being sold may have a slight impact. But, you know, again, I don't know how much volume any of that represents in the grand scheme of things. But
right. I'm curious if you – I was thinking about an alternative. I've been a borrow, you know, post-B Luna to ank and borrow and to sort of maximize, you know, my deposits for other generally Luna purchases. But I was thinking as an alternative with Luna – under 60, you know, to potentially repay most, if not all, of my anchor loan, free up my Luna, B Luna, convert it to Luna, refract, sell the Y Luna for P Luna while it's, you know, closer to a 50-50 kind of split. And if it's somewhere near 50-50, you're getting, you know, that leverage on Luna price. And I don't know if this has been announced at all, but curious if there might potentially be some opportunity to borrow against P Luna, like for example, like maybe on Mars down the road, where there could be like an alternate way to leverage your Luna without having to rely on sort of the anchor borrow mechanism. Do you see that as like a viable approach potentially?
Ryan or Jimmy, have you heard about what the Mars mechanisms are going to be? I believe it's on Monday, like Midas, myself, and Jose from Delphi, we're going to have a thing, I think, Monday evening, specifically going over sort of like the nuances of Mars from the perspective of you and me, the user, and like what kind of advantages and disadvantages, what kind of like collaterals we're going to be able to post on Mars, what kinds of borrow rates we might expect to see, what kind of LTVs we might expect to see. So all of those kinds of questions we're going to do, I believe, on Monday. So yeah, maybe look out for that as well.
Yeah, I guess if I could be, you know, a bit candid on the idea of using P tokens as collateral on Mars, is that you know, obviously Astroport would be considered like the premier DEX on Terra. And of course, like for us, we have Prism Swap, which is mainly for our own you know, Prism tokens and our refracted tokens. But one of the requirements for using Mars for P tokens as collateral on Mars is that they need to have a price on Astroport, right? So to determine, you know, when your borrows and what you're borrowing and when you should be liquidated, they're pulling in price feeds from Astroport, and they would not be pulling it from the Prism Swap. And their new pool type of the 0.3% swap only 0.02% of that going to, you know, X-Astro or VX-Astro stakers is a bit, appealing. But at the same time, like, as we've seen recently in the last few days, just with a couple of pairs, we've seen some, like, tremendous value capture alone for the X-Prism stakers. So it's really, like, you know, we're trying to weigh out options and, you know, see if we can collaborate and make things work for both parties, you know, to essentially use P tokens as collateral. But on the other side, we also
have... So, Jimmy, like, are you saying, like, collaboration meaning, like, a price feed comes from Prism somehow?
Yeah, I'm not exactly quite sure, like, the price feeds... Obviously, like, Astroport wants all of the trades to go through their decks, and you know, we're both equally incentivized to have more trades go through our own dexes, right? Yeah, so collaboration in terms of just, like, trying to figure out something that works for both sides, if it has to do with incentives, if it has to do with fees and how it's split, we haven't really even gotten to that point, right? Like, we're both trying to get through our you know, launch all of the features that we've kind of promised, and we're in the middle of our launch phase. So we can kind of talk about that a little bit later. But, and the only other opportunity I see out there to use P tokens as collateral in the near future is with Edge protocol, right? They just launched some, or they just announced their, I think, their testnet, and they've teased some things on Twitter and their Medium, but we're also keen to seeing if we can get P tokens on Edge to be listed as collateral.
And do you have, like, a short version of what, like, Edge does for everybody? Like, what is its purpose?
Oh yeah, so Edge is like a money market, right? So on Ethereum, the closest parallel is gonna be like Fuse from Rari. So a couple of their most popular pools are, like, from, I guess, like, influencers or whales on the Ethereum side. I think one of the largest ones is Tetranode. People might know him, and he essentially has a, like, I think he calls it the Tetranode locker, where anyone can, or there's a bunch of, like, assets that are listed that people can deposit and borrow against. So essentially it's like whitelisting Mars protocol, but for other people. So, like, we could have, like, a Prism money market, right? We could have, like, Sefi, you could have a Sefi money market, right? And as, like, you could essentially have, yeah, and
that's,
it's
the last thing, that's the last thing I need, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have, like, a GT money market, right? Like,
oh, got
any
it.
Any protocol or any, like, DAO can have their own money market where they're able to essentially lend, or, like, yeah, allow people to just, like, deposit, borrow, lend money.
Interesting. Okay, so that, so there may be a possibility of a P-Luna tie in there. So what we're getting at is, like, the increasing the value specifically for things like Y-Luna and P-Luna, and giving them, like, separate utilities that will create an increase in the total value locked within the Prism system, because you'll have more people that have refracted to have supplied those derivatives to these protocols, and the more total value you can lock, the more value accrual that comes back to, say, Prism holders, and ultimately, in a cross-chain situation, the more value that comes back to Terra in general. Well, very cool. ML, did you have a comment or question about anything we've been talking about today?
Yeah, just on the increase in supply we've seen over the last 6 days. I did a tweet on this earlier, you know, just pointing out the supply and showing the chart of what actually happened. And during the last 6 days, price has actually gone up to sideways. So I wonder if the increase in supply is people just going long Luna. They have UST, and the UST peg's been holding pretty much at a dollar. So I don't know if Terra Station defaults to converting UST into newly minted Luna based on, like, the DEX fees on the other DEXs. Like, do we know at what price USD has to be for, you know, Terra Station to actually default to actually minting Luna instead of using a DEX? Because, I mean, it could just be, you know, people going long Luna, and it's just creating Luna because Terra Station is defaulting to just minting Luna because of where the peg is at.
Not sure.
I think maybe Jimmy knows a little bit more about this, but I think for sizable buys of Luna, it sometimes does make more sense to mint than to buy on the decks because of slippage. I think I don't want to give misinformation. I think the slippage on the equivalent slippage on minting is about 0.5%. So I mean, theoretically, that could be.
That's a good point. Because when you buy large quantities on like a KuCoin or what have you, the slippage can be actually fairly substantial on a singular DEX. So you might have like a large buyer may have to buy on like multiple centralized exchanges, or maybe might get just a better deal with a UST to Luna mint, as like you said, as opposed to a like purchase on Astroport or something, or on a centralized exchange. I think for very large buys, like even Astroport and such is not liquid enough. You could face substantial slippage there. So maybe the mint is better. I mean, you could type it into Astroport and see what happens and see what the difference is between the minting it and the actual slippage on the DEX. But yeah, interesting points. Let me get Frugal on here for a second too. Frugal, you there?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I had questions about the Prism protocol. I had a meeting, so I couldn't attend the earlier one today. So I had question about phase four. So could you guys like explain more about as to what would be happening? From my understanding, it is that I would stake my Y Luna and I would be getting more Prism tokens instead of the rewards that I would be getting in place of just like the regular Y Luna rewards. Is that what's happening?
I guess I can take this one. You're referring to the Prism farm, is that right?
Yeah, that's gonna happen in phase four, from what I remember.
Okay, yeah. So the way that it's structured right now and in the launch announcement is that you're gonna have 130 million Prism tokens, or 13% of the supply inside of this pool. So yeah, you stake Y Luna, and the amount of Prism that you'll be getting is proportionate to the amount of Y Luna that you're providing relative to everyone else, right? So the staking rewards are all going back to the Prism protocol, and then 10% of those staking rewards are going to X Prism holders, and then in return you're getting Prism tokens. So it's very similar to like the Apollo DAO's community farming event, or like Orion's private farming event, or other farming events where essentially you're giving up yield in exchange for a governance token. And at any time, if you want to go do something else, like maybe there's too much Y Luna that got deposited into that pool and the APRs drop, you can always remove your Y Luna and go put it into like normal staking and receive your your normal airdrops and your P Luna Y Luna staking rewards. So it gives you that flexibility to move around if you'd like. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, that did. And like I had one more smaller question. Is X Prism like an auto compounding token, so it would always be more valuable than Prism? Am I understanding that more correctly?
Yeah, I think you're correct. And one way to think about it is similar to AUST and UST. Right, so if you look at like an AUST UST chart on CoinHaul, you'll see that it's going up steadily, right? And it's relative to essentially the 19.5% APY that you expect. But when you deposit, say, like 1,000 UST, it gives you back a certain amount of AUST, and the amount of AUST in your wallet doesn't change, but later on, the amount of UST that's redeemable increases over time, right? So very similar to XPRISM Prism. When you stake Prism, it's going to give you some set amount number of XPRISM. And later on, when you unstake and redeem your XPRISM, you're going to get more Prism than you had put in initially.
Right, that makes sense. So that's why I asked, because it doesn't make sense on the like Prism swap that like Prism is valued more than like the XPRISM token. So like the market might.
Yeah, I think you could probably think of that. You know, to give another example that will make sense, you can think of that like Luna B Luna, right? So you can take B Luna and you can slow burn it for 21 days, and you'll get one Luna back for every B Luna that you're burning, or you can go and swap it in the Luna B Luna pool, and you're probably going to get like 1 or 2% less Luna than you swapped for B Luna. And I think that's essentially what's happening on the Prism X Prism pool right now, is that you essentially, because we have a 21 day unstaking period on X Prism in the same way that you do with Luna. So for convenience, you can go and swap that in the Prism X Prism pool. Obviously, it's unlikely that you're going to get like an exact swap for the amount of Prism that X Prism is worth. I mean, right now, like, it's obviously still very close to 1-to-1. But as the value of X Prism versus Prism grows, you know, let's say it gets to 1.2 Prism per X Prism, you know, obviously that pool will sort of adjust accordingly, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, it does. Yeah, those are the questions that I had. Thank you.
Cool. Anyone else with comments, questions, theories? it's an interesting system, but I think everyone should sort of have a strategy if you're going to enter those pools, whether it's the like, we mentioned like 7 different pools that are going to be established on Prism, and each of them will have different sort of pros and cons in the short term, the long term, and then, you know, various forms of impermanent loss between your pairs. So you want to think clearly as far as what you're doing there, why you're doing it, how you're going to get into pools. So liquidity provision really is, I would say, a skill set that I'm certainly not a master of myself. And there are people that are like true, like LP pros, I would say. And it'd actually be nice to do a conversation with someone who's like a pro liquidity provider, kind of, you know, describe like their strategies. But some things to consider would be, even on LP pools, you know, you could start really small, you know, like, and kind of get to understand what you're doing, what the relationship between the various price action of the coins is, and even consider like a dollar cost average into an LP pool. There's also sometimes reasons to sort of get in and out of LP pools depending on what's happening to the price action of the individual tokens. Like, let's say, for example, your LP pool acquired more of a token you care about to such an extent that you'd rather just exit the pool, because it sort of, you know, indirectly bought more of the coin you cared about, and then you can sort of reevaluate. So there's a lot of different elements to that, and people should really know what they're doing before jumping into those. And it's not as simple as sort of like doing your own research. There's a little bit of like experience, I think, that goes into it as well, just learning the math and how things sort of move. And you should take those things kind of slowly, in my opinion, if you're new to this sort of thing. Caker, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, just kind of shifting gears a little bit. There was a couple things I saw in the last 24 hours that I thought were interesting. The first was, you remember that tax vote that Terra had a little while ago, eliminating the tax? Well, I guess that was kind of the problem with Kepler Wallet, being able to move UST from Osmosis to Terra. And that's apparently fixed now. So I know that was something that always bugged me, was I could get, you could move UST from Terra to Osmosis, but you couldn't get it back without, like, you can move Luna back and forth. So you'd have to buy Luna, send it over, and then sell it right away. But so that's kind of just a nice little thing that happened. And then,
yeah, it's the same. Yeah, excellent point. So yeah, what he's talking about is for people that if you're using a Kepler wallet, that's KEPLR, and you're using that to participate with, in particular, the most common use of that wallet right now is participation on Osmosis, which has quite a bit of the Cosmos-based coins and a variety of fairly good incentivized LPs that you might consider. It was a bit of a frustration going back and forth, but that's been essentially fixed at this point.
Cool. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you saw this, but Osmosis is coming out with a three-way stable pool with UST, USDC, and DAI. So I don't know what the ramifications of that. I don't know, maybe get some more Ethereum money into the Cosmos or something, but I'm not really sure if it's going to be ERC-20 or what it is, but I thought that was interesting that they're coming out with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's ways to simultaneously go in and out of the Cosmos, basically. Or, you know, more specifically, in and out of Osmosis' system, first and foremost. But yeah, that's all good, because it makes just one more route that you could take in a decentralized way to get from Ethereum to Terra. So all of that's really generally good for us. So, but at the same time, like, I think you could just go from Ethereum to Terra via Wormhole or via the Terra bridge. I believe you can do it directly now. I mean, even before that. So anyway, but that's going to help probably Osmosis a little bit more than it helps us directly, but it will tie up more UST, which is good.
Yeah. Well, just a couple of interesting things. Thanks.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for the comments. Both very useful. Let's see. Anybody else have anything else, or we can sort of wrap things up? There's, yeah, so quite a lot happening. And I'm sort of excited to see where the Secret Network goes in terms of not only their own stablecoin, which is, there's a project called Shade that's producing Silk, but also secondarily, like the integration of UST and the ability to move back and forth between here and there. We definitely have still a privacy issue on Terra, and that's being addressed either through the possibility of IBC in secret or via Void Protocol, which is a protocol being built on Terra, among other things. But there's various types of obfuscation or different layers or levels of security you can get into, depending on how hardcore you want to be about it. That's coming along. And some of that also has a lot to do with NFT marketplaces as well, you know, because you may have an NFT, but you don't want to necessarily dox your own wallet as a result of that. So, you know, a lot of people that do NFTs, they don't cross back and forth between their primary wallet and their NFT wallet. They keep that entirely separate and maybe connected to a centralized exchange. Therefore, it can't be sort of like tracked back to their wallet direct. But some of these other tactics will help with some of those kinds of issues. You really don't want to be interacting with some merchant at some point in the future. And like, you know, the merchant at the cash register decides to come and take you hostage because you have $100 million or something. Not to say that you do, but you understand the problem. You can't have people just be able to see what's in your wallet. So privacy is very important. And that's going to be, there's quite a bit of things emerging, both on Terra, which is not a native security chain, and on Secret Network, which is again, and these are all like really bullish use cases for Cosmos in general. And I think right now, looking at the overall picture of all of the world's cryptos, really, like bar none, Cosmos to me appears superior to everything in terms of the number of like really, really high utility chains, whether it's Osmosis, Terra, Juno, Secret, a lot of interesting things happening, and all super bullish for UST, quite frankly. Very, very cool. It's going to be very difficult for non-IBC chains to communicate. I'm sorry, to compete, because you know, wormholes. I'm sorry, bridges, and of which things like Wormhole are one of those examples. Have lots of different security flaws and problems, and the ability to use IBC for Cosmos and avoid most of those problems is going to be super exciting. Let me get Baroness on here for a minute. She was waiting here for a bit. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I came a little late to the game. I just had a quick question: what the benefits was with Prism to enter the Forge previously with UST, and then staking after doing a split from Prism to X-Prism?
Sure. We covered that a little bit already. It's essentially, if you've already gotten some Prism via the Forge, and if your primary goal for your Prism token is to basically earn staking yield, the way that's done is via the X-Prism coin, which will accrue value over time automatically. So there's nothing to claim, or there's nothing to, it's basically an auto-compounded coin, where the value of the coin itself just goes up over time, very similar to AUST. So me personally, I just took all my Prism and just stuck it in X-Prism, and that's what I did. So for what that's worth, there's a lot of, we talked a lot about how there's very exciting value accrual mechanisms for the Prism X token. And I think among most of the projects on Terra, yeah, to me, it seems like it has one of the most interesting value accrual mechanisms for long-term growth. So I like it, but then again, I've already bought it. So, like, you know, if people are buying here, you know, that's full disclosure. I've already got more on this latest dip today. So anyway.
Oh, thank you very much for humoring me. I'll just have to watch the recording. And then, are you planning on doing any spaces in the future over Juno?
Right now, I don't have the slightest clue about the pros and cons of Juno yet. I've done literally zero research, except for the fact that it's a smart contract platform. I haven't used it at all. And I don't know what applications are on it yet. If people know more about it, or if you have someone that's like a Juno wizard and would want to come on and, like, you know, be grilled by me for a little while, we could do that. But I do plan, when I have some time, to more thoroughly set up and use a Kepler wallet to play on Osmosis and with some of these other platforms. I find, on the whole, I don't run to other platforms unless I can find either a primary trading token that is better than, say, Luna, or like, I have a specific utility function I want on another chain that I can't get where I'm already at, right? So, like, I don't need to go to, I mean, you know, like, if any coins can go up and down in price, and my vision is that Luna's price has a better overall mechanism than most, I don't feel the need to sort of over, like, diversify personally. So not to say that maybe Juno is a great token, for example, but I don't own any because, A, I don't know what it is yet. I don't know what its tokenomics are. And the other reason I don't have any is because I just don't know what differently I'm going to do there that I'm already doing on Terra. So, like, why learn an entirely new system and a whole nother set of projects, understand all the risks of all of those, right? So all of this takes, like, some intellectual time, so to speak. And it's hard enough to keep track, honestly, about what's happening on one chain. And you sort of, like, divert your mind to too many things. I think it's hard to keep up, but hopefully it does really well. Hopefully, you know, the primary stable coin used with Juno is UST, which I think it probably will be via Osmosis, and we'll see. But, like, it is another smart contract platform. It would be interesting to know what the pros and cons of it are. Me personally, I think I'm more apt, though, to research what's happening on Secret Network first. And the reason for that is because Secret Network provides a utility in terms of privacy that you cannot find on Terra right now. So UST is essentially a public stablecoin open to the universe as far as, like, things that happen on the blockchain and like who can examine that and whatnot. I would be first and foremost interested in what Secret could do for us on Terra, what integrations might be, you know, possible there, either for NFTs or for just like obfuscating wallets, and like how that could be important in like payment gateways. So for, you know, one of the things that we really need, similar to how Terra Station is an easy to use, like customer facing wallet, we need ultimately like a simple app that a business could use. And we're not talking about like, you know, building out like Square or something like that out from scratch right now. Something simple that a simple vendor could use. Like, for example, if I was, you know, simply wanting to start accepting UST, and I don't want to like have a big infrastructure, a basic like, you know, iPhone app or, you know, Android app or something like that would be very nice. Maybe it shows a QR code and like you could use your phone or your app and, you know, kind of like immediately transmit to that code. The problem that we see right now, though, is that the sender wallet is basically showing every, you know, bit of money they have in their wallet to the vendor. And simultaneously, you can see how much money the vendor has. All of that is weird, like doesn't make any sense from a business perspective. And it's just simply not going to work without another layer or another ledger that kind of hides all of that information. So, you know, that's, I think, an important feature that could be solved theoretically by, like, you know, having a composability via a privacy network. And we just need to have that happen. Like, I don't know when it's going to happen or how, but without it, it's going to seriously stunt the growth of Terra one way or the other. So we'll see what happens in terms of innovations there. But I would definitely pay attention to Secret and what's happening. Super, super important, I think. Any comments, you guys, Jimmy? Yeah, sure. Jimmy or Ryan, any comments on those like theories as far as like payment systems? Have you guys heard anything?
No comment on from me.
Yeah, I just see it from the perspective of like a business owner, and like, you know, a business is not going to want to expose like the contents of its wallet for any obvious reason. Like, you don't walk into a department store, for example, and you could just simply do a wallet, a blockchain explorer on the on that business and find out how much they have. It's just weird. So you would have to at some point be able to mask that. It's not really for public consumption, so to speak, right? So we'll see what happens with all that. But because if we want to move past Terra or any blockchain being simply like a place to trade and accrue value, or just like essentially functionally trading on DEXs, then we need to have some functional pieces put in, I think, to make it easier to build external, like your Venmos and your, you know, your Squares, to either as a business or as a consumer. So like even you guys probably don't want to send a significant amount of money to somebody like a friend or whatever. It, like, that doesn't automatically mean that you want them to know the full contents of your wallet. And right now, like, you can figure out exactly that, which is weird. So that is a solution that needs to happen.
It's an interesting function of blockchain, right? It's financial freedom, but the whole world gets to see your finances. So it's a weird juxtaposition.
It is. And it's not entirely safe either, because there are numerous attack vectors. If people can know like how much money you have, right? Like, you know, of all the people you interact with, you just don't know which of them is a bad person, and which of them will start getting greedy if they happen to know that you have a certain amount in a wallet or something, right? So that could get that can be a problem if one is not careful. So I think somewhere along the lines, this problem has to be solved. I do like the fact that like outlet finance, Cash, and like Alice and whatnot, you know, their debit card systems are going to at least Cash announced this week that they're going to be they're creating a way to fiat on ramp onto some of these platforms. And these aren't available in every country, so if you're listening outside of certain jurisdictions, you may not have this available yet, but it looks like it was like almost like as cheap as $2, regardless of how much you imported into that wallet. And someone, I guess, was experimenting with it, and it was sort of a fixed fee situation. So as long as you brought in a feasible amount of money, as a percentage basis, the fee was minimal. But the good thing is there, you could create a brand new wallet, and like cash immediately deposited that into your wallet. So that fee was getting money all the way to your wallet, which is super interesting, very simple. And that can be really, really productive for on-ramping people. But I could see why I would use a wallet that I specifically set up for spending, I think, as a separate thing. Anyway, just some thoughts for people to be considering in terms of what to look out for and like how to evaluate new developments that are emerging. There are definitely certain things that we just need to have happen, and who's going to build them and when is really just the question. And the more we sort of talk about them and like describe what needs to be built, then people that are builders will say, oh, you know what? Like, we'll take that mantle and work on it. Let me get one last question here from Nick, and then we'll break. I think I've got some phone calls coming in, so I want to make sure I get that.
Hey, thanks. Go ahead, Nick. So the question I had was, I missed the earlier orbital command space, and I was just curious, did it come up for discussion at all? Maybe Jimmy or Ryan. I mean, if you had to guess, you know, what the general trend in when people are refracting, you know, in price discovery between Y Luna and P Luna, do you think it'll settle at 50-50 to start off with, or do you think there'll be more of a trend towards Y Luna being a little bit more valuable than P Luna? I mean, do you guys have any thoughts on that that you'd be willing to share? Not financial advice, obviously, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think obviously as people that work for the protocol, we've got to be very careful about, you know, what we say on this subject matter. I think we did touch on that, and Hyperion gave quite an extensive answer on that point without committing to any potential ratio. Firstly, a quick shout out to Terra Spaces here, who I know was on that call, and I think recorded it, so you should be able to listen back if you want to. It was a really good space, I thought, and pretty eye opening. In terms of where these things are going to trade against each other, you know, the answer I gave on that space is probably the same answer that I'm going to give here, which is like it's the great unknown, right? I think we've had 6 months of theorizing of, you know, where are these assets going to land against each other, and you know, we've had a whole host of, you know, people who are bullish on yield and fixed income, people who are bullish on the price side. You know, we had some discussion around, you know, perhaps people who are in jurisdictions where staking yield is taxable, maybe would want to be more in the P side. And then I think, like, you know, we also talked about how the volatility of Luna will also affect the price and the ratios against each other. And then also we've been talking today about, like, the different utilities of those tokens, and I think they could play a big part in demand as well. So, like, for example, when we launch, you know, obviously from a Y Luna perspective, you'll be able to stake that and receive staking yields. You'll also be able to participate in the farm, whereas P Luna essentially will either be a hold only token, or you know, if you're so inclined, you could provide that into the LP. So a lot less utility for P Luna versus Y Luna at the start. So that could be a demand factor as well. But then, if we were potentially able to get P Luna utilization out in Mars, in Lavana, in Edge, and across chains as well, then that could be you know, a demand vector for P Luna. So where will they land? I have absolutely no idea. Like my personal finger in the air was always kind of like maybe 40-60 Y to P or around that 50-50 mark, but I honestly have absolutely no idea, and I'm as interested as everyone else to see where they do end up landing.
And you should see, I would think, a number of weeks of like volatility where these things find sort of a balance to some extent. You know, so, and you know, not everyone even knows what Prism is yet, so there'll be some people that kind of come in late, some people that maybe didn't participate so far, but will emerge as like players, you know, going into this. some people might like just refract their Y-Luna and P-Luna to farm the rewards, but may not necessarily like buy or sell individual ones. Like I've thought of the concept myself of maybe using the yield from my existing Luna and maybe buying like the sub tokens with my yield, so that like I'm not really risking that much in terms of like volatility price exposure yet until I know what I'm going to do. But I can still like sort of play in the system and acquire a little bit here and there and like think it through what I'm going to do with these things. So yeah, definitely some thought should go into what you're doing. I wouldn't necessarily recommend going nuts and converting everything you have to one thing or the other without understanding that the price of Y Luna or P Luna could theoretically fall after you buy it. And, you know, therefore that could cause a change to the totality of your portfolio value, because these things will trade at a different velocity and a different rate than Luna itself, right? So you are getting underlying price exposure to Luna, but you're also additionally getting a secondary volatility on top of that, which is why like I have this tendency to be very interested in like, you know, volatility trading and maybe make use of that somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you've alluded to, I mean, you like the arbitrage plays, and it seems like there's going to be, for P Luna in particular, in let's just say a downtrend where people might not want the exposure to price action and then just dump into Y Luna because that's constant potentially, or goes up, you know, if the price of Luna goes down, potentially your yields go up. You could see some pretty impressive, it seems like it might be very interesting to see what the swings might be in moments like that for people like going back and forth, trying to optimize, you know, the greatest utility out of, you know, each side, you know, whether you're thinking, all right, price is going to go up, I want more P Luna, you know, price is going to go down, I'm going to try to jump into yield, and how quickly the market changes is going to be kind of exciting, but, you know, kind of scary to start off with.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the theory, right? Like as price goes up, the P Luna would absorb the majority of that price rise, and as price goes down, you know, the Y Luna would become more dominant. Whether that actually plays out or not is you know, is completely up to the market. So even though that's the theory, it doesn't necessarily happen in reality. So that's going to be very interesting.
Like just to help you use your imagination, think of it this way. So let's say one or the other is worth more than half a Luna, right? Because that's what's going to happen. It's probably not going to maintain a 50-50 peg. And let's say Y Luna is worth more. So at that point, the cheapest Y Luna that you're going to get is actually to refract more Luna.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a weird element.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
So So assuming you're willing to hold your P Luna at whatever it's worth, because technically that's worth a bit less. Technically, the cheapest way to get more Y Luna while Y Luna is higher is actually to buy Luna and refract half of it. Let's say you wanted to stake it and you just wanted to hold your P Luna. You could, because you still have the original Y Luna that you just staked. And if you simply wanted to like de-refract back to Luna, you could, right? So it depends on what you're trying to do with your, are you actually trying to leverage the fact that you're going to sell one half of it or whatnot to get more of the other? And maybe the answer is you don't sell, let's say, all your P Luna, right? Like maybe you sell, you know, maybe I sell, or I, you know, I refract to Y Luna because it's relatively cheaper, but then maybe like, I don't know, I sell some of it for like a profit and buy more P Luna or something, you know, like, so I might be able to keep my balance very similar, but I might get some arbitrage yield off of that, you know, those edge cases. I don't know. I'm just making up stuff in my head, but you can see how there's a little bit of a video game play that plays out here, and you have to think each method through as you go forward. And you could probably draw a little matrix for yourself, like, okay, if Y Luna is cheaper or P Luna is cheaper, and I've got Luna, and then I've got like these refracted components, and my options are to buy them outright on the market. I can go buy P Luna, I can go buy Y Luna. I can sell P Luna, I could sell Y Luna. I could refract, I could de-refract. So these are sort of my options in the game. And then like from there, you say to yourself, well, okay, like which of these is the most valuable play right now? And you just want to think it through. And I think day to day that may change, and you may have like better opportunities on some days than others.
Is C-Luna going to function? I mean, you said it's a marker, but does it functionally? I mean, when you park it, is there a place where you can get yield off of it if it's unrefracted? Or does it always just go to Luna and then C, and then you don't really hold the C and you go to refract?
Yeah, essentially when you deposit Luna, it'll go from straight from the C to the PMY. You'll never hold the C at that point. It'll go straight into refracted. The only point you get to the C is if you then merge the PMY back to C. And then the only real utility for the C is to swap between C Luna and the different assets on the AMM. So it's
you have to either burn the C Luna for 21 days or you can swap at whatever rate that's at. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So there's three bags you want to have. Well, four bags. Because I mean, you might want to hold C Luna for an arbitrage, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that you'll be able to do, I don't believe we'll have this ready for next week, but soon, is the limit orders. So you would be able to place like a limit order across the pools. So you could say like, I want to swap Luna to C Luna if there's like a 5% discount, for example. And then you'll flip over to C, and then you might hold the C, and then say, I want to flip back to Luna if it goes back to, you know, 0.98 of a Luna, for example. So that's another function.
Yeah. So basically a lot of,
it's going to get complicated.
Yeah. A lot of sort of like, trading games that can be played, and Nick is right. Like the more sort of primitives you have at any given moment, in theory, that allows you to take advantage of different sort of opportunities as they arise, because you need to, if you're going to do arbitrage, you really have to be able to buy something and sell something at a whim. And so you wind up with the price exposure of all of the component pieces in theory. But, you know, the good thing is you're generally exposed to Luna on all of these. So that's the plus side. Well, assuming that's a plus side for you.
I just add here that I think like the best resource that kind of compiles everything and the nuances that we've talked about is the Fish Market Academy. He's got a really good YouTube video on how to value P Luna, Y Luna. He takes a look at it from like more of a traditional sense, like traditional finance sense on yield and discounted rates. And what are some scenarios where P Luna might trade higher? What are some scenarios that Y Luna might trade higher? And just does like a really great job of just summarizing everything that we've kind of talked about here in one package.
Cool. And the name of that was what again?
It's a Fish Market Academy.
Okay.
Yep. On YouTube, you can probably look up like Fish Market Academy, Prism, and I don't know, it should pop up.
Is that on our Notion as well, Jimmy?
It might be. I don't know, actually. If it's not, I'll get it on there.
We need to make a note.
Does he incorporate the spreadsheet you created, Jimmy? Sort of have it.
I think he mentions like the dashboard that I made. Maybe somewhere towards the end of the video. He doesn't actually go through and like mess around with it though.
Oh, and there's one other element to this whole thing too, by the way, gang. Like, you also, because the Prism token is an intermediary between all of these trading pairs, there may be some strategic scenarios where some of the LPs and, the various price actions of things could actually both help you acquire more Prism while it's low in theory. And, like maybe take advantage of your theory as to whether P Luna or Y Luna are the ones that are going to go up. So the LP rebalance is going to be interesting to keep in mind as well. And you should be very careful with that, as I mentioned before, but that might be another piece of the strategy puzzle, especially if you're one of the people that thinks that you should be acquiring more, you know, Prism token for whatever reason to say, for example, stake in governance or to put in the Prism XLP. So there are some other strategies that might involve your bullishness on the Prism token. And my suspicion is that like a lot of the DAOs and whatnot are probably going to be incorporating some of the higher quality project coins, whether it's like Astroport's token or Prism's token. So these are like more longer term ideas, like over years, I think. Not specific financial advice. I don't know that for sure. I'm just saying like some of the more high quality projects, I tend to just hold those things and see where they go.
Just on the Prism token, I mean, we're 3 days in to the token and we've had two absolutely incredible ARB opportunities on that Prism X Prism pool already. The first was when we first launched, where X Prism was worth 1.2 Prism, I think it topped out at. So there's an opportunity to make kind of 20% extra Prism if you were quick there. And then today, you know, as the price was facing some volatility, I think you could pick up 1x Prism for as low as 0.91 Prism. So if you were kind of keeping an eye out for those opportunities, two fantastic opportunities in just the 3 days that we've been trading on only two of the pairs that are available.
Yeah, if you guys are on Telegram and you don't have RB, I think it's RB the bot, ARBIE. You guys definitely need to get that one. Essentially, you just hit it with a /ARBS and it pulls all of the opportunities across TerraSwap, Astroport, Loop, and even the Prism swap. And it gives you like an indicator. If it's red, it's a bad swap. Yellow, maybe. And green, hey, you should be trading this right now. And the only one that's like kind of consistently off peg these days is like the liquid PSI from Pylon. And then they have a large too, right? You can say, oh, if it's like if it crosses 0.5% or 1% or 5% or whatever, it'll ping you. So you can go, you know, do your thing. And then just to expand a little bit more on, you know, some of the ARB opportunities that Ryan was talking about, I think it occurs when there's two market conditions. One, if like people are selling Prism faster than X Prism, then you can essentially just quickly swap, you know, X Prism to Prism and then restake it for a profit. Or if for some reason people are like, maybe they don't know the govern tab exists and they just decide to ape into X Prism such that the X Prism price diverges from the Prism price, and then the same opportunity occurs where you can essentially just swap X Prism for Prism and then restake it for an instant profit without having to worry about like, you know, the 21-day ARB.
Do you guys think what's your thinking in terms of the kinds of volumes that are going to sustain on Prism versus what we're seeing so far? There's still, I guess there's a fair amount of volume today because of all the, you know, it's everything's fresh. And I'm imagining, you know, when all the LPs open up, there's going to be an element of that as well. What's your thoughts on like long-term, like the goal for, you know, traded volume and where that's going? And the reason I ask that is because obviously the traded volume has a lot to do with the like value accrual for LP holders and, you know, value accrual for, Prism holders as well.
Yeah, I think I'd say like, as long as crypto remains volatile and it has volatile moments, the amount of value accrual for the X Prism holders is going to be pretty tremendous. These ARB opportunities present themselves when there are moments of volatility, right? Like if Luna is increasing or decreasing in price faster than like the P Luna or Y Luna token prices, you know, if they can't keep up, then those opportunities to mint or merge tokens and sell them for a profit exists, right? So you can look at our protocol as essentially like a dampener effect on the price of any of the assets that we decide to refract, right? If it's pumping too fast, then people will start buying it up, minting the components for a profit, or the vice or vice versa. So if the price is dropping too quickly, then people are going to be doing the opposite. So as long as crypto is volatile, I think we have a very good use case and value control mechanism.
And now you understand like why I've been watching for Prism all this time and been interested. It's because like that's what I think, like that's where most of the sort of like energy in crypto is. It's in the volatility. Most people don't think of it that way. They think of volatility as their enemy. But as you guys all know, like the volatility is clearly your friend, and it's the only reason why you're actually in crypto. Because the funny thing is, if it wasn't volatile, it wouldn't go up. And if it doesn't go up, no one would be in it. So there is a sort of an element of like that volatility growth proportionality. But my suspicion is that Prism's volumes over time are actually going to increase more and more and more as people discover all the various like specific ARB opportunities similar to the Luna v Luna situation. And that has been a relatively sort of lucrative pairing, either as an LP or otherwise in the past. So I think Prism just represents more like fun and games for us for the next probably few years. And, as you're buying now, your choices are a little bit different, because normally you would just say, hey, I'm just going to buy some more Luna. Whereas in this paradigm, you might decide to buy some Y Luna or some P Luna, depending on where you think you're getting a good deal, based on market conditions. You may actually find better deals than, again, the general public. So your goal is to sort of outperform the random, Coinbase buyer who's just buying Luna and holding it. You're trying to find arbitrage opportunities such that, in theory, you can find Luna on average cheaper than everybody else. And if that means it's only like, you're making a 2% extra here and there a month, that adds up really, really quickly. And that's why like these types of lessons are really important, given the sort of structure of the way DEXs and AMMs work and how you can play games with these things. So really a lot of like fun lessons that are, I think they've been very lucrative for me. I can tell you that right now. But I think they're not difficult to like learn. You just have to be willing to sort of like take your time and think through it a little bit.
So Sefi, how would you, I mean, you'd held some Luna X, or maybe still are, but I mean, do you see a value in Luna X now once you can start refracting? I mean, it feels like the use case starts to go down.
They're slightly different. And ultimately there may be some combinations that emerge using Luna X, which is a fundamentally liquid auto compounder. And say, for example, here's a good example. Let's say you created a rebalancer with AUST, with Prism X, and Luna X, right? All three are auto compounding coins. And essentially it would trade the volatility of those things and automatically net you the volatility ARB, while each one of them has very potentially high yield in and of themselves. See how interesting that becomes? So the Stator coins are no less interesting, I would think, in their own right, in that they're liquid staked auto compounding coins, and they're going to be having derivatives also, like with Atom and Solana and whatnot. So the more of those that emerge, the more like fun and games we can do, like composing them with Prism actually. So it's in those details that you can make some of the coolest things. Like, if you think about it carefully, like number one, in traditional finance, how many things do you know that are volatile against each other? Plenty, right? But how many things do you know that do that are very high yield that you can auto compound? Like not very many, right? Like, so the interesting thing about these is they present some very superb, I would say, mixture of volatility ARB extraction plus, you know, the yield accumulation while simultaneously maintaining reasonable exposure to all these different sort of risk profiles. And, you know, most of what I talk about is really sort of more, a little bit more long-term, but, you know, assuming the success of like what I just mentioned, the different coins involved, like, you know, you could have those things like auto compounding at an obnoxious pace, not just the rate that they naturally do, but then the volatility arbitrage auto compounding as well. And you might have APYs north of like, I don't know, 200-300%, right? Like, it's just crazy money. So if you just look at how, if you want to learn a little bit about what I'm talking about, just go operate a rebalancer bot on KuCoin with several volatile coins that you like and see what I'm talking about. The compounding rewards over time can be quite good, but those things are not liquid staked assets. So the mixture of liquid staked assets that each of the coins are actually rising in value also, that can be super compelling. But anyway, that's kind of the vision for this.
Now you've got VUST to add to your list of auto-compounding tokens as distant future.
Yeah, and actually the benefit there is what you're getting by having different ones is that not only does it like change your risk profile up a little bit in terms of not having the risk of only one thing, but also the fact that there is like price volatility individually for each of these, and you could basically extract what essentially is like market inefficiency or like the kinetic energy of that movement. And the more of them you have, the more volatility you introduce, right? Because like one day VUST may have some volatility and be off its peg, and another day maybe, like, you know, AUST is doing something different versus VUST or something like that. And so you get these weird situations, but Prism X being an auto compounder is very compelling also, because the other nice thing about having auto compounders is they're not taxable essentially, because they just keep growing, right? They're only taxable upon sale. So if you just leave it there, it just functions as a auto compounding, you know, instrument, which you don't have to like, it's like getting dividends, but not, it's just wrapped into the value of the coin, like the value of a stock going up, as opposed to you getting dividends that you have to pay taxes on. So all of those auto compounding components are beautiful from a like tax efficiency standpoint. That's true almost in most jurisdiction, outside of the most favorable like crypto jurisdictions as far as taxes are concerned. So yeah, the mixture of these things is where my imagination really sort of runs wild. And I think there's plenty of talented developers you know, who can build these things for us without too much sweat. The hard problem is getting the primitives made, right? The hard part is bringing the cross-chain assets over, so you can get different price exposures at any given moment. But once you have that, you know, like producing the, you know, some of the protocols on top of that is sort of, you're not really reinventing anything. A lot of those things exist already on different platforms. You're sort of just copying them, honestly. And but you're doing them in a much more efficient way on chain with way less fees, and ultimately benefiting every one of us, and ultimately benefiting the Terra blockchain and the transactions that happen on it, and ultimately bring more value to Luna holders. So all of these things are super, super useful and not totally fleshed out even on other blockchains. So Prism in particular, I don't think there is a version of Prism anywhere else. Is there yet, guys? Like, is there something, a corollary to that yet anywhere that people have built?
On other chains, they've only had like fixed maturities, and they're built on top of, you know, yield bearing assets, like from yield bearing tokens, like from Yearn Finance. And from what I've seen, not too many of them have gotten a lot of traction. One, because, you know, once you start introducing like these fixed terms, that gets really confusing. And, you know, we already have like quite a bit of frequently asked questions that, you know, folks are, when they're trying to wrap their head around Prism, but then like starting to introduce the time element into everything gets really tricky. And I think like, that's one of the reasons why it really hasn't taken off on Ethereum. And then there is one called Tempus that, you know, they've partnered up with Lido Finance to essentially, you know, do these principal and yield tokens for staked Luna. Staked ETH, I think, on Ethereum. But again, they have like these fixed terms that make it really confusing for people. So one of the benefits that we have over here is obviously like our gas transaction fees are super, super low. And then we have this opportunity to create perpetuals instead of, or starting with perpetuals, that makes things a little bit simpler for everyone to understand.
Yeah, not only perpetuals, but even, you know, protocols and strategies that require lots and lots of executed orders, because our fees are low. And hopefully if our slippage is also low, then, you know, we can efficiently execute trades, hopefully, and do things that maybe are not possible on some chains. Now, there are other chains like Solana and whatnot where you can do some interesting things, but their fee structure is also very different from ours too, which I think we have the superior structure. But anyway, well, it's good to catch up with everybody. I think we're gonna break, because otherwise we're gonna drag this on forever as we do. and hopefully everyone enjoyed the day today. So much interesting news and great ways to have fun in the markets here. And yeah, learn carefully, I would say. All right, have a good day, everybody.
Good chatting as always, Sefi.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a CeFi Space, Washington Nationals, and other Luna news, recorded on Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes, and check them out online at WeFund.app. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sipping on a little bit of sin I've been giving, try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute reality ain't got limits, going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics, stretching out the distance. For instance, let me be specific, the risk is hedge funding the business, betting on the difference, ingesting all the research, sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first. Sleep tight, little dreamer, early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor, taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension, something to endear myself a little bit, something kind of embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an awe sound. It's true. It really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. When it's fine if I don't know, I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll, tip the first domino. Feeling up, I'm in a bowl with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road, gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground soaring. I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in, I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be seizing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little has to do with what everything is, but it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives unto ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge but important nonetheless.
Terra Spaces.